Hey guys, David Day here. I just wanted to throw a little bit of a wrench into this week's episode because we actually recorded this episode about 2 years ago. This has been sitting around in the vaults for a long time, and so it's time for it to see the light of day because Bryce and I need a vacation. So,
your last name is Day.
Okay. So that's why you're hearing this episode. So bear with us, and we'll be back with a new episode next week instead of one of these dusty old ones. So a lot of the drops are going to be a callback from the days of yore. Also, a lot of the we're not going to have the theme music that we normally would. So you're going to get a little taste of that old school horror movie talk. So, without further ado, here is Pieces. This episode of Horror Movie Talk is brought to you by Iron Curtain Condoms, surplus condoms from the USSR. Tired of condoms that don't inspire confidence? So thin you aren't even sure if they're working? Iron Curtain Condoms uses only the strongest hard plastics that are forged by the people for your wiener. For sale in convenient Karl Marx 3-packs or the value saver size Soviet blocks of 100. Visit IronCurtainCondoms.com and enter the promo code Bolshevik today and receive the same deal everyone else gets all the time. Iron Curtain Condoms. Protect your dick like we protect the motherland. Hello and welcome to Horror Movie Talk, an opinionated and accidentally funny horror movie review show. Your schlubby hosts each week are Bryce Hansen, the cool collected nihilist, and David Day, a being of transcendent light. New theatrical releases always get priority, but we also review older horror movies, both good and horrible. I'm David Day.
I'm Bryce Hansen.
Today we are reviewing a fun little ditty from 1982 called Pieces. We will start out by giving you guys a brief review and our score for the movie. We score on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being horrible, 5 being totally average, and 10 being a fantastic movie that transcends the genre of horror and is just good overall, all the time, for everything, probably Academy Award, you know. So you know how 1 to 10 works. Later, we will be playing the Rotten Tomatoes game and taking a look at what's available on Shudder right now. But first, we're going to give a few plugs to ourselves. Check us out at horrormovietalk.com. That's our website. All reviews go up with a nice written review, and we do have a blog that's doing pretty well, written by Keith Harris, who's cranking out some. His last one was Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Were the fans wrong about the Halloween that doesn't include Mike Myers? So check out our website. We also post on social media. We're most active on Facebook and Twitter. We post new episodes every Wednesday, so go ahead and subscribe and leave a review of the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to podcasts. We joined the Amazon Associates program, which means you can really easily support our podcast by clicking through our Amazon link, which is at the top of our header on our website. It's a green button. It says Buy on Amazon. And if you just click through that link anytime you're going to buy anything on Amazon, you can help support the show with a little bit, a couple cents here and there. Just throw us a couple pennies. That's all we want.
So, please, sir.
just a sixpence. Also, you can help support the show by joining Shudder using our promo code HMT at checkout. Shudder, SHUDDER.com is a streaming platform for horror shows, horror movies, and later in this episode, we'll go over kind of my picks for this week. And take a look at what's available on there so that you guys feel, you know, better about joining the Shudder family. I gotta say, they got a pretty good selection.
Yeah, so this movie was on Shudder.
Yeah, maybe not the best selection on Shudder, but
it's good. I mean, as far as a curated list, it's pretty great for horror fans, and they've got original content.
Tons of original
other content. Podcasts and yeah. stuff. So
yeah, so HMT at checkout to receive a free 30-day trial instead of a 7-day trial of Shudder, subscription Shudder to Shudder. Thanks again for listening, and let's get into the show. So as I was saying before, today we watched, or last night we watched Pieces on Shudder, and it was fun, if extremely dated, slasher from 1982. It's got intensely awkward scenes, lots of gratuitous nudity, and is the ultimate form of copycat slasher bullshit. So if any of that sounds fun to you, check it out on Shudder. Here is the trailer.
Warning. What you will see in the movie Pieces cannot be revealed, cannot be described, cannot even be imagined. And you don't have to go to Texas for a chainsaw massacre. Pieces, it's exactly what you think it is. Pieces. Absolutely no one under 17 will be admitted.
I was previewing the blog or the episode post on our site.
Yeah.
Because you have it already written up. And Aaron was looking over my shoulder at the poster. And the tagline is, "It's exactly what you expect it is." And she just laughed.
It's not wrong.
I love it, though. In that trailer, even the mixed message of, you'll never be prepared for what you'll see. It's exactly what you expect it is.
That's true. Yeah.
Okay.
You're kind of sending me mixed messages here, spooky, talky guy.
Yeah.
Pieces. I didn't pick Pieces. I picked Pieces out of a hat, kind of.
Because
I wanted, like, I had so much fun with, so this is being pre-recorded. So we just released one of my favorite episodes of Horror Movie Talk ever, which is Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah, that was a great one.
And it was so much fun to do that episode.
God damn, look at those hot children.
God damn it. It was so much fun to do that episode and to listen to that episode. Like, in my opinion, Sleepaway Camp is our best episode to date.
Yeah.
As we're recording this.
Yeah, it felt very fun.
It did. And so I wanted to recapture some of that. So I was like, I was just feverishly Googling, like, what is another 80s slasher that feels hokey and corny and fun?
Mm-hmm.
And so I came up with Pieces, and as luck would have it, it was available on Shudder. So I was like, bingo, we're doing Pieces. I'd done the same year as...
Sleepaway Camp was 83.
Oh, my apologies. This was the year before.
Yeah.
So I wanted to recapture Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah, neither one of us are like librarians of horror.
No.
You know, we haven't seen every single classic slasher or B-movie.
Yeah.
And so when we come across suggestions or hear a certain... you know, movie mentioned a couple times, we'll catalog it away. But when we watch it, we get to be pleasantly surprised because we've never watched it before.
Right.
Because it's not like you see Sleepaway Camp on cable.
Right. Never.
And
it's a treasure that's hidden.
Yeah. And horror fans are the only ones really seeking it out.
Right.
And it's not classic to anyone else.
Yeah, you know, that brings up an interesting point, which is how many forgotten movies are there out there?
I mean,
and how countless. how many of them get picked up, like what genre gets picked up and dusted off the most? And I feel like horror is probably at least near the top of the pile for that list.
Right.
No one's going back and picking up a bunch of old dramas that were just kind of like halfway decent.
Right. Yeah. Like Kevin, my friend, he always references just, to me, completely obscure movies, but we've seen them. There there's movies that you watch on cable or you're on Netflix and you go, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That has some actors in it that I like.
Oh, yeah.
And then I bet I like this movie. And you start watching it, and you start having deja vu, and you realize, I watched this 15 years ago.
Yeah. Critters.
I don't remember anything about it, but I slightly understand from my slight recognition that I've watched this before.
Yeah. And it's always, for me, it's always horror.
Yeah.
Usually. I think because those were always the things that stood out that, you know, I mean, if I ran across a drama, I would never watch it. If I ran across an action movie, it'd be like, yeah, maybe half the time.
Yeah.
But horror was always so titillating to me that I was like, oh, okay, yeah, what's this about? So, yeah, it's like, oh, Critters has people that I recognize in it. Oh, Friday the 13th has, Nightmare on Elm Street has Johnny Depp in it.
Yeah, so, I mean, these movies, especially the not top-tier horror movies that are old, I mean, I haven't seen a lot of, you know, super, super popular horror movies from the 80s. In terms of, I mean,
yeah.
I don't think I've sat through all of American Werewolf in London, you know, stuff like that, where a lot of people have seen it. And that stuff is on cable, and I still haven't sat through it. But yeah, when you get to Sleepaway Camp or Silent Night, Deadly Night, you just get to be pleasantly surprised.
Oh, you're like,
okay, this is great.
This is
a unique,
yeah,
you know, snapshot.
Yeah, and it's an accident. Like, we were talking about this before the show. The reason Sleepaway Camp and Pieces are, and this movie that we're reviewing today, Pieces, the reason they're fun and campy and funny is because it wasn't intentional. It was it was an accident that happened.
Right.
That where enough weird shit came together in the right order, and it wasn't meant to be funny, and it wasn't meant to be fun necessarily. It just ended up being just ridiculous enough to sit in that weird shelf that says cult classics. And I get it. If you're trying to aim for that shelf, it's very hard to get there unless you're like Trauma, you know, unless you're, that's your niche.
Right.
Anyway, so, Pieces is a slasher that starts out with a young boy putting a smutty puzzle together. His mom walks in on him fiddling around with this puzzle and maybe something else, and does what any good mom would do. She flips the fuck out. The boy leaves the room in a fit of anger and comes back within about 10 seconds, wielding an axe that he uses to murder the shit out of his mom. This supposedly happens in the 1940s, which is weird because I don't know for sure, Bryce, but I imagine it was remarkably hard to get your hands on a smut puzzle from the 1980s when you lived in the 1940s. You know, it just seems like something that wouldn't be available to a 10-year-old kid, a smutty puzzle with a pinup girl on it, like not like a girl with a perm.
Uh-huh.
In the 1940s, I just don't think you get that.
Yeah, that'd probably be contraband, to say the least.
Yeah. So
you would expect, like, the girl to be straddling, like, a bomb or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
Or have, like, a sailor hat on.
Wow. That was juicy. So we fast forward, like, just kind of, this is a brief overview of Pieces. We fast forward in time 40 years to a university that is having, you know, just a few issues with a grisly series of chainsaw murders. The movie transforms into, oh, and on that note, on the chainsaw murders note, that's another tagline for this movie that was used quite heavily, which is, you don't need to go to Texas for a murder, for a chainsaw murder. You don't need to go to Texas for a chainsaw murder.
Massacre.
Yeah. So this movie really is shameless about pulling from things that have worked in other slasher movies,
mm-hmm,
to try to hit some...
And not quite understanding why they work
they
in
have
other
no
slasher
idea.
Movies.
They have no idea. So much weird shit just gets thrown... I mean, there's a piece of this movie that inexplicably contains lots of very fast kung fu.
Yeah, this movie has, it's kind of a meme in just terrible movie scenes, is that scene with the kung fu professor or whatever.
Okay, so wrong.
Must be some bad chop suey.
You know what? That's exactly what this is. This movie is a person who doesn't understand memes trying to use memes. That's it, the same effect is achieved.
Right. And in particular, when it comes to jump scares or subverting expectations, you know?
They have no idea what's happening. They don't have any idea what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
to where it's not like... The reaction that they're going for is like... surprise, like, oh! To, oh.
Yeah.
That's the reaction they're trying to go to. Except what they get is, what?
Just a kind of an angry stare.
Just like, you go, ugh, what?
What the heck were they? Why'd they do that?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of falling on their face. It's the movie just kind of like, what's that? Self-flatulation? It's not flatulation.
That's when you fart on yourself. You put your heel underneath your ass.
Flagellation.
Oh, flagellation. Okay, yeah, that's something else.
It's a movie that you watch to see the movie self-flagellate itself, you know, just kind of just beat itself up because it's bad at doing everything. It just does everything. It tries to do everything right, but it just falls on its face over and over again.
Yeah.
So we fast forward in time 40 years to university that is having some issues with a grisly series of chainsaw murders. The movie transforms into kind of a whodunit with plenty of potential suspects that could be the shadowy killer who seemingly only targets attractive naked co-eds. And as I was kind of saying before, Pieces wants to be a fun, funny cult slasher, and to some extent it is. But it tried so hard to cash in on the early slasher craze that it actually ends up being a fun, funny cult slasher because of how hard it falls on its face. It is good because it's bad. It's funny because it's not. Gratuitousness and irony, bad irony, are what rules the day in Pieces. And I had a pretty fun time watching it. What was your impression of... what did you come away from Pieces with?
It wasn't the most enjoyable film.
No.
I think with, maybe the difference between becoming an actual cult classic and having that extra added charm is the filmmakers have to be making a good faith effort to be making... art.
Yeah.
And when you watch this, it's not, I mean, you could still classify this as a cult movie. I'm sure people do and get lots of enjoyment out of it, but to me, when I see it and it's definitely like cynically exploitative,
yeah,
it just takes away the charm and it's not as fun. I'm not the kind of person that's like watching a slasher for a slasher, and people love slashers just because, hey, you get to watch people getting slashed.
Yeah,
look, if that's you, you'll love this movie.
Yeah, this is
no
this
question
right up your alley if all you like is to see people get gratuitously murdered.
Right. I also think about Puppet Master, to where it's also, we reviewed Puppet Master The Littlest Reich, and there was lots of really, really gratuitous
Silly
scenes.
Yeah.
To where it was tasteless, but also in the background as the foundation, they're at least trying to have some kind of color to the backstory of these puppets and all this stuff. And
I think you may be giving giving Puppet Master a little bit of credit where it isn't necessarily due. I think, in my opinion, Puppet Master really hits the nail on the head as far as just being like, we're going for as offensive as possible.
Right. But also, they're trying as a movie to kind of make a movie.
Right.
To have some kind of storyline. And this one, I'm not sure that they're even really trying to make a movie. It's like, we're trying to string together
I was right there.
These scenes, these murders.
I was right there with Pieces for the first 30 minutes of this thing. And then it really slowly unraveled in a very boring, shitty way. There was a lot of... Anyway, so...
that being said, like, this movie can be enjoyable.
Oh, yeah.
But not to sit down alone and at midnight and watch it yourself. You know, not the most enjoyable. But if you're sitting with a group of friends and having some beers and making fun of a movie, this provides plenty of opportunities for entertainment.
Yes, this is a movie, if you are good at doing the Mystery Science Theater 3000 thing, then you can impress some fucking people with when you sit down and watch Pieces with them. Because there are plenty of spots for you to poke big, big fun at this movie. And it's the movie is so ridiculous that it makes it fun to watch. So my score for this has been revised a little bit. I'm going down with it. I'm going 3 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm also 3 out of 10. I think 3 out of 10 is my sweet spot for it's very bad, but you can have fun making fun of it.
Yeah,
are some ridiculous moments in it to where you can look at it and be like, I laughed so hard about how badly that was done.
Right.
That I enjoyed it. As opposed to a 2 or a 1 where it's not even enjoyable on any level.
Yeah.
Like, you've sat through it and you regret it.
Yeah.
100%.
100%. Yeah, so a pretty solid 3 out of 10 from us on this one. It was fun. It was funny, but it wasn't great. Hey guys, Valentine's Day is upon us.
Happy Valentine's!
So make sure you're ready for whenever or wherever the night may take you. Our friends at Manscaped.com, the global leaders in men's below-the-waist grooming, are here to tell you that you need to use the best tools for the job so you can be ready for anything on that special day. Sexual intercourse.
I'm talking about sexual intercourse.
If your girl can't think of what to get you this year, then you tell her to get you the gift that's for you and her. And that's basically the thing that helps you trim your bush up, your cock and balls, gets the stick and berries all nice looking. So, and that would be the Perfect Package 3.0, of course, from Manscaped. It's full of the best products to keep you looking and smelling and feeling oh so sensual and sexual and just acceptable, really. Just getting you to that level that where you're touchable.
Right.
So, you know, this comes with the lawnmower, which you need if you're going to enter our one titty challenge, which I should mention is still going on right now. It ends at the end of March this year, and you just gotta take a picture of your beautiful Manscaped boob. And with your lawnmower 3.0 in the picture, post it to our Facebook group, and you will be. Oh, and you have to throw on the tag on the hashtag #OneTittyHMT, and that'll enter you into the contest. And you stand to win a Google Home Mini and a couple of Horror Movie Talk stickers and a big note from us. So make sure to enter HMT at checkout at manscaped.com to get 20% off your order for that Valentine's Day sweet shit. And
free shipping.
And free shipping. And then you can enter yourself in the contest and maybe win a Google Home Mini and some stickers. Also, supporting Horror Movie Talk is nightchannels.com. This place sells all the best in the occult and horror movie themed t-shirts. They got all kinds of shit. You want a Scanners t-shirt? Great. You want an Aliens t-shirt? You got it. Do you want a Sallow t-shirt? They have that too. They have all of the craziest shit. And for really reasonable prices, these shirts seem to retail around the $18 mark. And if you enter HMT at checkout, that gets you 13% off your order. That will be going to support a local to us shirt manufacturer, and they've been a sponsor of the show for over a month now, so we sure do want them to stick around. So make sure to browse their site, see what kind of shirts tickle your fancy, and just throw 7 or 8 or 9 or 25 of those shirts in your cart, enter HMT at checkout, and then you'll be, you know, you'll be spooking people out on the street. Bryce, have you gotten any of your Night Channel shirts yet?
Yeah, they're awesome. And I mean, I'm a big guy, and they even got my size, so check them out.
Yeah, they're the Glidden shirts, or Gildan? I can't remember. I think they're Glidden. Anyway, so you guys check those out. HMT at checkout gets you 13% off at nightchannels.com. Also, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by heading over to our Patreon at patreon.com/horrormovietalk. From there, you can get access to a whole nother podcast that we do called The After Pod, and you can even do cool stuff like vote on a movie, one movie a month for us to review. So check that out, and that is a great way to support the show. Most of our support comes from patrons, so and we try and stay really active in that community. You also get access to all of the unreleased episodes that we have, which there's a decent amount of, and you get early access to those episodes, so head on over there. If you'd like a Horror Movie Talk shirt or stickers without having to enter the One Titty Challenge, you can head on over to horrormovietalk.com/shop. And purchase a shirt or stickers with all kinds of cool artwork by our professional artist who fucks so hard, Dustin Goble. And you can support him by giving him a follow, tossing him a follow on the Insta over at DGOEBEL00. That's at DGOBEL00 on Instagram. And he, of course, takes commissions for artwork. So let him know HMT sent you. Thanks for supporting the show. We can't do it without you. We're small. We're local to you, no matter where you are. Even in Malta, we're local there too. We have branches all over the world. So thanks for supporting the show, and let's get on to spoilers. So with that, we're going to transition into spoilers. If you don't want to learn too much about Pieces, then, you know, cut it now.
I mean, but it is exactly what you expect it to be.
Oh,
just it's like the tagline says.
Yeah, it is exactly what you expect it to be.
You know, I was a little self-conscious about our drops, because some of the feedback I've gotten from listeners is the drops and the transition music is way too loud. It's way louder than when you're speaking, and I have to turn down the volume. And then I listen to Your Mom's House, and they have the same problem too. Just like blasting your ears with audio clips, or
maybe you know what? And when I listen to our episodes, and when I listen to other drop heavy pods like Adam Carolla Show or Your Mom's House, or, you know, anything that contains a lot of drops, it's something that I'm so used to from radio. Like, I, just like you, I used to listen to just talk radio all the time, and you know, shock jock, you know, I'd listen to Howard Stern and all that kind of crap, and there was plenty of drops, and they were always loud, and I guess I just, that was something that I just expect it. Or maybe I'm just dead to it. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyways.
Anyway, let's talk about the smut puzzle, because this puzzle was on screen for, I'd say, a grand total. This movie was an hour and 25 minutes, including the credits at the end and at the start.
Yeah, an hour 25 minutes running time, probably at least 30 to 40 minutes of tits.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And at least 5 minutes of smut puzzle.
Yeah.
That's not an exaggeration. You get to see a person.
You know what? You know the YouTube channel How To Basic?
Yes.
The puzzle shots kind of reminded me of that. Yeah.
With like there was a heavy breathing in the background. There was a nervous hand in the foreground.
Just slowly. And the How To Basic videos where it pauses from the insanity and he's just lovingly stroking like a doll head or something like that. That's how this faceless hand is putting together this smut puzzle from 1940s.
Yeah, there's a lot of terrifying tenderness going on. And I can see how it might have worked in 1982. But let me tell you, watching someone, you know, okay, so imagine you're at your house and your mom's putting together a puzzle and you're watching her. It's that entertaining, except now there's boobs on the puzzle. So it's a little bit awkward.
There's a certain aspect of the filmmakers trying to utilize, you know, the Mike Myers or Black Christmas heavy breathing element and first person perspective. And it's just not interesting.
It's not good.
Like, yeah, it's fun to see first person perspective when they're stalking and being super, super creepy.
Yeah.
Not when they're putting together their favorite puzzle.
Right. This movie really is a Frankenstein. It just, it takes everything that it thinks worked about every movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes, and then it kind of like pushes it in front of you and goes, huh? You like it when I breathe heavy?
Right.
Like, no, not really. No, I liked it when he did it because he did it good. You're just breathing heavy over a naked puzzle. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. This movie had to be fair to it, it had a pretty strong hook at the start. That beginning sequence, it had me pretty good, where the little boy was putting together this smutty puzzle, his mom walks in on him, and then he gets so irate that he runs in with an axe and murders her. The goofy factor was already off the charts, and it felt a little bit, to me, it felt a little bit like Silent Night, Deadly Night, and I thought, it's on. This is going to be fun. This is going to be funny. And to be honest with you, when the police walked in and they find the body of his mom sans a head, and then they open the closet and his mom was in the closet, his mom's head was in the closet on a dresser, like disembodied, I was rolling on the floor because I'm pretty sure she blinked. Like, they clearly just hollowed out a dresser, put her, you know, it wasn't a fake head. It was clearly her head, and she was like, what's up?
I just realized, too, like, how much of a ripoff this opening is of Halloween, the original.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a little kid
being a murderer. Every single piece of this movie is a ripoff of something.
Yeah.
It's a strong ripoff of something. You're absolutely right, though. It's a little kid, and in Halloween, he murders his sister.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he's outside with the knife. That's very shocking. This is equally shocking. It's a good start. I thought the start was pretty good.
Yeah. And it is representative of the rest of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's the rest of the movie is as subtle as that opening shot of a child axing his mother in the face.
Yeah. Yeah, the stars of pieces are all B-movie and TV actors, with the only two actors of any real note being Linda Day George, who plays Mary Riggs, the hot undercover cop slash tennis slash pro tennis player. Why would... Okay, now hang on, let me...
This is one of those movies to where I can't pay 100% attention just because I zone out at a certain amount of quality of just like... I can't really dedicate all of my attention, even if I'm looking at it, even if there's nothing else happening and I'm looking at it and listening in it. At a certain point, I realize that I've zoned out, and I never followed why this professional
it's too hard.
Has somehow appeared in the police station. And she's an undercover cop now.
There's so many elements of this that are just confusing and confounding. Okay, so let me set this up for you a second. We're in, I think, the police. I'm not even sure where we are when we meet Linda Day. And she's this, you know, stunner, a blonde woman, beautiful. And the police lieutenant and Kendall... The only two other, like, main characters in this movie are there, and they meet her. And Kendall's like, whoa! What was her name in the movie? Mary Riggs? Mary Riggs, are you the pro tennis player? I really, you know, I keep up on that. And she's like, oh, well, I appreciate that. And then the lieutenant goes, yeah, and we're making her an undercover agent. Okay. There's so much wrong with just what I just said. This young lad who's just attending college immediately recognizes this person and goes, are you Mary Riggs?
Or
Mary? Yeah, Mary Riggs. And she's like, yeah, I'm the pro tennis player. And he's like, I recognize you immediately. And then the cop's like, we're making her an undercover agent. You know, the people you're definitely not supposed to recognize at all under any circumstances. And then, as an undercover agent, she's gonna play pro tennis at the university where she's undercover at.
It's the perfect cover.
It's the perfect fucking cover. None of this made sense to me at all. I'm so glad to hear that you couldn't quite piece it together either. I don't. And then, you know what? I'll be like, man, I really didn't get that. And then I'll go and read a review of somebody at like Bloody Disgusting or something like that. And they understood the whole thing. But Bryce, when I go and read their review of the movie that perfectly explained, I can't pay attention to that. Like, it's almost like my brain is Teflon, yeah, for the bullshit in these ridiculously fucked out movies.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can explain it. I can't, even when I read it on paper, I'm like, I don't know what this is.
It's like someone was writing a screenplay and the opening element, it's like if you had software that helps you write a screenplay and the first thing you do is pick characters for your movie and then it's just a wacky Mad Libs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that is...
Blank name is a blank. But she recently became a blank. Like, all right, so let's see. Mary Riggs is a professional tennis player.
All right.
And now she's an undercover cop.
Yeah.
All right, moving on.
Okay. I'm good enough. That's good enough for me. You guys want to go get lunch? Yeah, that's good enough.
All right, yeah.
So... the other notable character, or I should say actor in this movie, is Christopher George, who plays Lieutenant Bracken, who, I swear to God...
Yes, he does look a lot like Roger Moore.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm watching this movie, I'm like, is that fucking Roger Moore? Like, I was certain it was Roger Moore. I was like, is that James Bond in this horrible piece of shit? And then, no, it wasn't. Yeah. It was, but man, if he doesn't look just like him.
He's got really similar bone structure.
Yeah, yeah, he sure does. Okay, so for all intents and purposes, for the rest of this podcast, we're going to be referring to Lieutenant Bracken as Roger Moore.
Okay.
There was also another just kind of a technical problem with this movie was, it was horribly dubbed.
100% dubbed, too. I don't think there's any audio that was from the actual live filming, because it was so bad. Totally Japanese film level, and there was several points where they're just not even saying...
Not the words that... The
words that they're saying is not...
Don't match up.
Yeah, the scene where... with a full frontal dude...
Full scene. Frontal dudity.
He's like sleeping with some girl and she's like, oh, I want you to fuck me so bad. And he's like, no, I gotta look out this window. like there's
this, looking at Bryce saying, telling me he wants me to fuck him so bad, I'm like, oh my god, we may have to turn off this podcast.
We know. I'm not your target market.
No.
You're...
God damn, look at those hot children. God damn it.
But yeah, that scene where she's talking, there's definitely points where she's saying something like, ooh, but why not? And the words are like...
flowing.
Why can't you do this for me? Or something like that. It's like not even closely connected.
Yeah, it's very bad.
And if you're a savvy filmmaker, you would change that audio not while it's a close-up of their face, but yeah, when it's the shot of someone else's back
of him or looking their out the reaction. Window.
Yeah.
Yeah, of him looking out the window. You wouldn't have her. You wouldn't have the shot of her making dialogue that's totally not synced up with what you're what yeah. you're dubbing over. So this brings up a little something that made me think. So have you and I have some experience doing audio editing for this podcast. And I won't say it's the most difficult thing in the world, but it is time consuming. It is very time consuming. Mm-hmm. And I can't even fathom how time consuming it would be when you're trying to get those words to match up to someone's mouth on a screen. This must have taken so much work to shoot a movie with sound and then shoot the whole movie's sound again and then overlay one track over the other.
Well, I mean, I think you're giving them too much credit for how much effort that they did. Well, I mean, when they're recording ADR, the actor is watching the film.
What's ADR?
ADR is... what is ADR? Audio something. It's basically when you record the dialogue after the fact.
Oh, okay.
Or you re-record sound after the fact. So the actor's watching the screen of the scene and then dubbing over themselves.
Live.
So all you have to do is just take that track and sync it up
I gotcha.
To the scene or whatever. And yeah, if the audio editor was like putting it each syllable directly over the mouth, then yeah, that'd be a lot of work. But I don't think they did that. I think they just
still
said,
you're
we're
recording.
Starting here, and this is where the actor started recording, and this is where
yeah,
it's
but
tough.
You're still recording the movie twice.
Yeah,
it seems exhausting, and it's not worth it for this. Just go with the shitty audio. Although I don't know how bad the audio originally was. The whodunit aspect of pieces is only interesting enough for you to say, hey, they're trying to do some sort of Clue ripoff thing. But you'd be wrong then, because Clue was released in 1985, and this was released in 82, so that'd be a silly thing of you to say. But the story is very heavy-handed in its suggestion that the antagonist is Professor Arthur Brown, which leads you to believe that it's probably Professor Arthur Brown throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, if there's the one thing that this movie did okay was that. I mean, from my lack of attention,
it had a decent
from some
twist.
Of it,
yeah.
I did just
default.
Default to be like, okay, well, it's that guy because he's acting weird, and he's not the main guy acting weird. There's a couple red herrings of who it could be.
There's some very obvious red herrings. We'll get into the red herrings in just a moment. But Professor Brown is the... Okay. Professor Brown is the in charge of the anatomy department and is always sneaking around where he shouldn't be. He's
And
he's
like
creepy.
When he's on one of the scenes and he's... Oh, yeah. He touches the chainsaw when the officers tell him, like, no, don't touch it. You're going to ruin the evidence.
You're contaminating
and he's like,
the evidence.
Like, oh, okay. And then you think, like, oh, okay, because if he's the killer, then he knows to touch it so that he can say, oh, I was there and I touched it.
Yeah,
it wasn't
me. They wanted
me
to do that.
And then as he's walking away, he like, lovingly looks at this severed arm as, like, from 20 paces away. He's like,
dream,
just keeping eye contact.
Dream.
On his severed arm. So you're just assuming, okay, so he's, okay, I see what they're doing here.
So obviously at this point we've set up the fact that it isn't actually Professor Brown, but he's the patsy. But this begs the question, why was Professor Brown so in love with that arm? Why, like, I mean, if he wasn't the killer, which he wasn't, he didn't end up being, that guy has a lot of issues still. And the way they explain it away is brilliant. Because it's the most 1982 thing ever. He's gay.
I didn't even catch that.
They just go, yeah, he's gay. And then it's like, oh, well, that explains everything. I know why he's a creep now. It's like the most just a throwaway. It's like, it's just find something that we consider to be perverse, and then we can move on. Anyway, the other red herring that was my favorite part of the whole movie was the groundskeeper.
Oh my gosh, groundskeeper side eye.
Oh, groundskeeper. He was fabulous. He was a mountain of a man. Just an immense heaping hulk of a person.
Yeah, if you're going to be casting a Popeye movie, he would definitely be Bluto.
You wouldn't need to do anything. This man dwarfed everybody, and he was so hammy. He definitely did not know how to act at all. And they were like, you're supposed to be a patsy. You're supposed to be a red herring in this. So give yourself some shifty eyes. And then this dude...
Shifty eye is 10 out of 10.
This dude's eyes were the shiftiest eyes I've ever seen. They were shiftless.
So, yeah, one eye half closed, the other like open, and always looking from the side.
It was very Dwayne the Rock Johnson of him. It was constant. He was always smelling what the Rock was cooking.
Yeah.
Every second of the day. He was just... and there was one part, so when we first get...
And there's never a point at which like you're told, oh, wait, he's just a normal guy.
No.
You know, usually... You know, you go into his house and it's like, oh, look, he's got pictures of kittens. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
No, this guy is just super creep.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
When we're first introduced to him, he's got a chainsaw and he lovingly strokes it. He's like running his hand, you know, okay, so take the back of your hand and like rub it along your cheek. Right? Like the way someone, if someone loved you, that's what they might do, mm-hmm. but no one loves you, so they don't do that.
Yeah.
But you can do it to yourself and you can still see what I'm saying.
Exactly.
And this dude does that action up and down the bar of this chainsaw, just like, oh, yeah. I love you, chainsaw.
Yeah. We should put up a picture of groundskeeper side eye.
Okay. Yeah.
Just, yeah.
He was pretty impressive. There were some great one-off lines in this movie. One of my very favorites came pretty early in the movie. Have you ever been... Female student number one says to another female student, have you ever been laid on a waterbed? Female student two responds, the most beautiful thing in the world is smoking pot and fucking on a waterbed at the same time. I was like, yay! That's ridiculous.
Remember waterbeds?
I do. Did you know anybody who had a waterbed?
I had a waterbed.
What?
Mine was, it wasn't like a true, or wasn't like a traditional waterbed. Because in most waterbeds, the middle stretches out. And so,
right.
And then it creates like a mountain in the middle of it.
Okay, yeah.
When you're not sleeping on it. But they made these water beds where it was just these tubes. Mine was like tubes of water. It wasn't just one giant reservoir. And in the tubes there was foam. And so it was felt much more like a gooey bed.
Oh.
But yeah, the water bed got old pretty quick.
Yeah. Every time I laid on a water... Like, the idea... The concept to my childlike mind... was always top tier.
Yeah.
It was like, well, this is the ultimate
is the
in human existence.
Yeah.
This is the best thing that's ever been created.
Which is, you know, I'm kind of sad that my children don't live in a world with waterbeds.
It's a strange world without waterbeds. Like, because they really represent something that looks fabulous on paper and it just falls so flat on... You know, on real life inspection.
I mean, even when you jump in a waterbed and you like lay down, you're like, yeah, "This is really comfortable." Like, I remember.
Really, you thought waterbeds were comfortable?
I thought it would be so fun to sleep in a waterbed, and it wasn't super uncomfortable.
This is the other problem, which is that's exactly what you think. You go, "How fun would it be to sleep on a waterbed?" And as it turns out, no fun at all because you're asleep. It's the most kid thought ever. You're like, "How can I maximize my fun even when I'm asleep?"
Yeah.
And that math works when you're a kid. You wake up, like, I just transitioned my daughter over to a quote-unquote big girl bed, which is, you know, just not a crib.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, in the car on the way home from daycare, I was like, are you fucking ready for a big girl bed? And she was like, ah, I'm so, so excited. And, you know, I basically tricked her into enjoying her new bed, mm-hmm. which is what you have to get excited about something boring. Anyway, waterbeds were featured prominently in this movie, more so than any other movie I've ever seen. But by bar none, more waterbeds in this movie than any other movie I've ever seen. There was one waterbed in this movie.
Yes.
There were a few. There was lots, as we mentioned before, lots of nudity. At one point, there was just an inexplicable scene of just random people having sex outdoors on a college campus.
Yeah.
What? What? Okay. Yeah. Like, the groundskeeper just looked over some bushes, and he's like, his eyes were shiftily looking. And then they...
just at the base of a tree in the middle of campus.
Yeah, just... dude has pants around his ankles and he's just plowing a girl. It's like, what the fuck is happening? And then it doesn't address it. Like, it just keeps on going. It's like, whatever. There you go. People having sex on the in the middle of the day. At one point in this movie, a girl asks one of the lead characters, who is not notable enough to name in this review, his name's Kendall, if he wants to go have sex in the school pool. He answers in the affirmative. Kendall's down to fuck in the pool. Then becomes sidelined by a plot point that's not important enough to mention in this. As she waits for him in the pool, she is murdered, which is a good thing, because let me just say, you should never have sex in a pool. Here's a couple reasons why. This is turning into a PSA.
Public service announcement.
Not only is pool sex really gross for everyone else who has to use the pool after you, like, have a thought for your fellow human beings. It can also cause some nasty UTIs and other infections that can mess up your system for weeks. You're really pushing a lot of chemicals up into a place they really shouldn't be. So don't...
And know, really, water is not a good lube.
It is the worst lube.
Yeah.
So, just FYI, don't do that. This girl is extremely lucky that... This girl is extremely lucky that she was killed before having sex in the pool.
Right.
Because that would have been... That's gross. So this girl gets murdered by kind of a... by a shadowy man with a pool skimmer and a chainsaw in the pool room. And then the police show up. And they... while looking at the blood-covered chainsaw next to a horribly mutilated body of this girl... to the anatomy professor, the police lieutenant says, hey, could this have been done with the chainsaw? I don't want to take the time to take this body down to the coroner. Can you just weigh in as the anatomy professor?
And he's like, well, even to a layman, she was cut up with a chainsaw.
Yeah.
I mean, look, there's a chainsaw right here covered in blood, and she's chopped up. Case closed.
Case closed.
Well, good thing we heard it from the expert.
Exactly. Yeah, and by the way, so I used to, like, for my job, I used to use a chainsaw a decent amount, like, on a daily basis. And I worked for the Forest Service, and we did a lot of trail work, and we did a lot of fire stuff.
I'm reading ahead to the list of deaths.
Oh, yeah. You like that?
Yeah.
So, fairly well trained. Also, my family are arborists, so they all use chainsaws all the time. Fairly well trained in using a chainsaw. Part of being employed by the federal government and having to use a chainsaw means having to go through a chainsaw safety course. And part of a chainsaw safety course means looking at horribly mutilated real-life accidents that have occurred with chainsaws. And let me tell you, a chainsaw wound looks worse than a gunshot, looks worse than a shotgun shot. It's just, it goes all, it's very horrific. And in this movie, it's portrayed as a knife. That just slices. It's like one of those turkey knives that has a motor in it.
Right.
You know? It just finely cuts. And so they did that wrong. I mean, I'm just saying, if you're going for real life accuracy, you really want those chainsaw wounds to appear horrendous. Mm-hmm. Because in real life they do. Yeah, so this kind of brings us to the deaths that are available in the movie Pieces. They're ridiculous to the point of being hilarious. And some of the some of the ways that people die in Pieces are... You want to go back and forth on this one?
Sure, okay. Yeah. Skateboarding through a mirror.
There's a chainsaw in the pool room.
Chainsaw in the garden.
Chainsaw in the elevator.
Waterbed stabbing. That which is actually probably one of the better ones.
Yeah.
Because he stabs the girl and starts stabbing the waterbed, you know, missing her and hitting the waterbed. And then it's like
all the budget in this movie went towards that scene.
Yeah.
It was like, we need a waterbed.
And you know, that must have been the last scene of the movie. And here's why. This director, I'm sure, is one shady motherfucker because he had to convince, you know, like 20 women to appear topless for, you know, 5 minute stretches.
Yeah.
I bet that guy was using that waterbed, you know, as a casting couch.
I like
back
this.
In the day. And it was like, all right. And then at the end of the movie, he's like, all right, we don't need this waterbed anymore. Let's kill one of them.
That's a brilliant point. I like how
that was actually just in the director's office.
I like
that wasn't a movie set.
I like that you've thought that out so mm-hmm. far, like that. But that's a really good point. That there's a good chance. Oh, you know, thinking about it, like waterbeds were such a big deal in the 80s.
Yeah,
like they were so fucking big. There's no way. At least some of the cast didn't lay each other on that. Like 100%.
Right.
That definitely happened. And that scene was. Like, it was clear that was someone's baby because it was in slow motion. Like, they really, like, everything was very well
but
curated.
That was, like, a great visual of seeing the blood mixing with the water in the waterbed and having her in a pool of,
it was,
you know,
yeah,
water
it was crazy.
Bed blood. That was probably one of the better ones. Anyways, yeah, moving on.
Other deaths in Pieces are... An axe to the noggin.
Death by pool skimmer.
And finally, my favorite, death by dick grab.
Yeah. The final death.
This movie does...
Which is just another inexplicable thing.
It was the weirdest fucking ending to any movie ever.
Makes no sense.
It was very Friday the 13th ending, right? So you know how Friday the 13th, most of them, a lot of them, have that like two or three false endings where you're like, ah, and then it's like, no, not the ending. Here's something even more stressful. This one tries to do that in the weirdest way imaginable. And we'll get there. I'll tell you how that happens, but it ends in a dick grab that kills a man to death. there's also lots of menial task footage that you have to sit through if you're going to commit to watching Pieces. Shudder doesn't have a great way to fast forward. So, like, it doesn't have the 30-second or 10-second jumps. So you will have to sit through the killer solving a smutty puzzle for 5 minutes.
And then aerobic exercise.
Jazzercise. Pretty heavy for a good while. Also, the lowest energy tennis match that I've ever seen at the pro level.
If I was paying more attention, I'm sure that they only had 5 shots of those girls hitting the tennis ball that they just reused over and over again.
It was like watching 10-year-olds who've been playing tennis for 2 years play tennis against each other.
And it was obvious that they weren't actually returning the ball, it was just someone
not to each other
throwing a tennis ball at him.
Yeah, throw it at my racket so that it strikes my racket appropriately. And then, finally, there's just a fuckload of boring chit-chat in this movie.
Yeah, the jazzercise part was so... I mean, I grew up with Jane Fonda.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Those tapes. And it was very much that, like, fetishizing that whole thing. You're like, oh, yeah. Look at those hip bones.
They're kind of sweaty.
Oh, I bet one of them's going to get murdered.
I wonder what it smells like in that room. I mean, Yeah, so another ridiculous part of this movie is let's talk about that Asian kung fu professor.
Yeah, that's the biggest non sequitur moment possibly in movie history.
I don't know.
Where... She's walking. Mary
Linda Day
Riggs is walking along, you know, and you're you're expecting the killer to be around any moment, and they're stalking. And then all of a sudden, this little Asian guy comes out and starts like, "Wah!" And then she like kicks him in the nuts, and he faints.
Well, let's be clear. He went "Wah!" for a good minute at her. Like, he was aggressively kung-fuing at her for 60 seconds or so, and then she kicks him in the nads.
And then someone else comes, and he gets up, and Kendall goes, "Oh, this is my kung fu professor.
My kung fu professor."
And kung fu professor says, "I just came, and then I was on the floor. Must have been some bad chop suey."
Ha ha, so wrong. It was like, oh my god, what the fuck is this? It's almost like this movie asked the question, what's popular right now? And then they took every single piece of pop culture and waved it in front of the audience for 3 minutes. We've already talked about most of those. The ending of this movie reminded me of The House That Jack Built ending.
Oh, yeah.
The lousy dean who is present through the movie, but he's just kind of facilitating the... Help me out here. I've lost a word.
The investigation.
The investigation. And as it turns out, it's that lousy dean. And he was the one who was doing it the whole time. And he was using the pieces of the victims that he was killing to piece together a replica of his mother, who he murdered with an axe while he was putting together a smutty puzzle when he was 10 in the 1940s.
Right.
So I wonder if...
Do you see...
Where?
You know, how it rhymes. You know, he's putting together a puzzle.
It's pieces.
Piece by piece. Yeah. And, you know, there's puzzle pieces, and then he cuts off pieces of his victims, and then he puts them together.
Right.
And it's just...
And there's body parts on the pieces of the puzzle.
It's like poetry.
Pieces of body on pieces of the puzzle. I can't believe I watched this whole movie.
I know.
It was rough. It was also fun. And one of the false endings is... So here's the false ending. They learn it's the lousy dean. The lousy dean, I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you kids. And then they take him away. They open up his closet in his office, and this corpse, pieced together Frankenstein girl corpse, example of his mother falls out of it dead because it's pieced together. And then they're like, oh my gosh, there's all the missing pieces of the bodies that we've been finding. Okay, well, all is well. And then the corpse reaches up and grabs Kendall's dick and rips his dick. And the movie ends with him going, ouch, my dick.
Yeah, it's like a Friday the 13th ending that makes less sense.
Much less sense. And is much less effective. If anything, the ending is really the best part of this movie because it's so inexplicable and so weird.
You know, maybe it's a commentary.
Oh.
You know, it's a meta commentary because you've watched, you know, the men that are watching this movie are looking at just the female body and objectifying it. And, you know, that the moral to the story is that, you know, the real evil is your penis.
Maybe it's just a convenient segue to get the girl I'm watching the movie with to grab my dick. High five. Yeah, it's tasteless. It's horrible. It's hilarious. Pieces is available on Shudder as we record this. So enter HMT at checkout at shudder.com and you get 30 days free trial to watch Pieces and say what a hilarious piece of shit that is.
Yeah. So final recommendations, like this is a very specific recommendation. If you have a group of friends and you want to watch a terrible horror movie to make fun of, you can watch this one.
Pieces is that terrible horror movie. Yeah, for sure. So now we're going to transition into the Rotten Tomatoes game. I think we have a little clip to transition.
Oh, yeah, we do. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Rotten.
potatoes.
Rotten. Yeah, so this is Attack of the Rotten Tomatoes. This is a Rotten Tomatoes game where I pit two movies against each other, and Bryce has to guess which one of them has the higher Rotten Tomatoes score. And normally we have a theme, and this is, by the way, this is the Tatometer score. This isn't the audience score. So we always have a theme, usually, and this week's theme is going to be the Coen Brothers movies.
Ooh.
So I'm pitting Coen Brothers movies against horror movies, and there's five rounds, and Bryce has to guess which one has the higher Rotten Tomato Tatometer score. So, without further ado, I've tried to make this pretty diabolical.
Okay.
So, Coen Brothers movies, first one is Fargo versus Eraserhead. Have you ever seen Eraserhead?
No.
Oh, man. You want an uncomfortable
movie. I started watching it, and I'm just like, I don't like this type of movie. It's David Lynch, right?
Yeah, it's the most David Lynch.
I don't like avant-garde stuff just for the sake of avant-garde.
I don't think this, no one is meant to like this movie. This movie is not a likable movie.
I mean, Fargo has to be higher than that.
You think?
Absolutely.
This is David Lynch. Okay, well, you definitely got that one right. It's not much, though. It's only 2% different.
That's insane.
Fargo, 93%. Eraserhead, 91%.
Wow.
Man, let me tell you, if you like uncomfortable shit, watch Eraserhead. That movie is the epitome of discomfort. Like, it does not get it from the grating sound to the horrific visuals. Eraserhead, oh man, and the atmosphere, it's just scary. Mm. Anyway. Okay, number two. So Bryce got one for one. Number two, No Country for Old Men versus Rosemary's Baby.
Oof.
Yeah, that one's tough, huh? Share with us what's going through your head.
No Country for Old Men is a fantastic movie, nominated for an Academy Award, but so was Rosemary's Baby.
I think No Country won.
Yeah. Did it?
I believe so. It
Best
was up
picture? No, there's no way.
It was up against Eastern Promises.
That would mean there's justice in the world, and I can't believe that would happen.
No, this was 2007. This was one of the ones that actually made perfect sense, because it was up against The Eastern Promises, great movie.
Uh-huh.
You get to see Viggo Mortensen's dick. There Will Be Blood. No Country for Old Men. This was for Best Picture. No Country for Old Men. And then that Keira Knightley one that I can't recall.
Atonement.
Atonement. Yeah, so any one of those made sense to me.
Let's see. Like, the game you have to play is the discounting factor about culture of the time and the reviewers. And I think a movie predominantly featuring white men is just not going to get the goodwill that a culturally significant movie like Rosemary's Baby gets. But then again, it's a horror movie. I'm overthinking this. I'm going to say...
It is the horror movie, kind of.
I'm going to say No Country for Old Men.
Oh, you were so close to getting it right, man. You really... Yeah, no, Rosemary's Baby is certified fresh at 99%.
99?
That's,
wow.
Yeah, that's one of those ones where people have been reviewing it since and really just boosted it up, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fantastic movie, but...
No Country came in at 93%.
Yeah. 93, wow.
Okay.
All right.
So one for two. The next
set.
The next set is The Exorcist versus, which is one of your all-time favorites, versus The Big Lebowski.
Yeah. I'm trying to think like David, because he knows it's my favorite. And so Actually, both of these movies are my favorite.
They're great
movies.
How can
you not love The Big Lebowski?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll say The Exorcist is higher.
And what's the thought behind that?
I think, well, no, actually, because over time, I mean, everyone loves The Big Lebowski. I think at the time, it probably wasn't as well reviewed as The Exorcist.
So,
The Exorcist was a cultural phenomenon, and I'm sure critics at the time recognized that. But I wouldn't be surprised if some of them are like, well, this is beyond the pale, and this is terrible. This is a bad movie.
That's true.
And The Big Lebowski, in terms of a movie, it's super... the story is kind of convoluted. It's a very, like, wishy-washy, noir kind of thing.
It's super Coen-y, which is...
easy to like misinterpret what they're trying to do with it.
It's another movie about not much.
Right. But yeah, I'll say Exorcist.
You are correct. Yes. Yeah. The scores on both of these surprise me a lot, especially given they've both haven't had a lot of time to breathe for reviews.
Uh-huh.
Especially The Exorcist. The Exorcist, 85%. I would have expected 90s for sure.
Yeah.
The Big Lebowski, 82%. Like,
how can it be that low? That's crazy.
Easily the most lauded movie, I'd say, of our generation.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing that comes close to The Big Lebowski as far as just beloved movies.
Right.
Yeah, so that was weird. That was interesting to me.
I would have thought both of those would be in the 90s.
Yeah. So, the next set is my favorite Coen Brothers movie, maybe. I don't know. It's definitely one of my favorites. Burn After Reading versus the original Dario Argento Suspiria.
Suspiria.
You're saying Suspiria. You said it so fast.
Yeah.
Okay. No, you're very wrong.
Really?
This is the biggest gap
that
we have. Yeah. Burn After Reading, fresh at 78%. Suspiria, only 64%.
Wow.
Great.
I didn't think Burn After Reading was that well reviewed.
It wasn't as far as Coen Brother movies go.
I feel like, yeah, that one was like on the downswing of Coen Brothers.
I think it's one of the very best.
I didn't like it.
I love it. I love it because it's so ridiculous and it points at its ridiculousness. It's like, what did we learn? I don't know. nothing really. This is just another one of our movies about nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff happened. I love that. And then you're...
Two out of four.
So the last...
Tiebreaker.
Yeah, the last pairing, the tiebreaker is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which I did not like, versus The Witch.
Ooh.
2015, one of the best horror movies maybe ever made.
Ooh, yeah. Oh man, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou is so beloved though.
I don't get that at all. Why do people love it so much? Is it George Clooney? And if so, why doesn't that transfer to Burn After Reading?
It's one of the first like real... Well, not the first real, but I mean, it's such a colorful movie in terms of the tone and the visuals of it.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the first movies that really, really took advantage of the color correction, like digital color correction after the fact, where it was super noticeable. And
I think Big Fish probably did it more, but maybe not as good and before.
Yeah, so Oh Brother, Where Art Thou versus The Witch. I'm going to say The Witch.
Good guess. Bryce comes out of this with 3 out of 5. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou has a 77% and The Witch has a 91%. So pretty big spread there.
Because The Witch is super impressive even just on its own, even if it wasn't a horror film. If it was just a historical film, it was so well crafted.
It was perfect.
And so well researched. And then Oh Brother, Where Art Thou has been out for a while, and there'll be plenty of people that'll be like, yeah, second viewing, it's like, it's not.
Time will not be as kind and hasn't been as kind to Oh Brother, Where Art Thou as it was and is to The Big Lebowski. And there's a reason for that. One's really, 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 really good. And the other one's kind of fluffy.
Have you watched The Ballad of Buster Scruggs yet?
Oh, man. That's why I did this. Because I watched The Ballad of Buster Scruggs last weekend and I watched it twice.
Yeah.
It was so much fun.
Yeah, it was way better than I thought it was going to be.
Me too. A bunch of short stories about the Old West and just weird, very Coen Brothers-y. Yeah. Just like, here's circumstances that happened.
Lots of great characters, character moments and stuff.
And
just so dark. It's like the darkest humor.
Yes, it was very good. And what's his face? The singer?
Tom Waits.
Tom Waits as the old gold miner. Oh my God.
It was really great.
Like about halfway through that, I was like, holy shit, is that Tom Waits? I was like, God damn. Like, and I don't know why I didn't recognize it, because they intro that short with him walking through and singing in his gravelly old voice.
Yeah.
He's such a good. If you haven't seen on Netflix, it's a Netflix exclusive, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. You gotta watch it.
And that's probably one of my rare circumstances in which I actually liked James Franco.
Oh man, that was such a that was ironically the lightest of all of them.
Yeah, that was a great. I mean, as far as all the shorts go.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was one of the most entertaining, just that character.
Yeah.
And the situation.
I really like James Franco anyway. He does not, I can see why he would bother people. Don't get me wrong. Like, and he's so damn good looking bastard.
Is he though?
He's really good looking in this one.
I'm just not, I don't get it. He looks like a little rat faced dude that somehow weaseled his way into.
He does look weaselly a little bit. Yeah. But that's kind of what's attractive about him.
Every time I see him in a movie, I'm like, how is he considered a good actor?
Who's your go-to good-looking guy?
Like Chris Pine, or
I don't even know who that is.
Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, Chris Hemsworth for sure.
Chris Pine is the guy, he's Captain Kirk in the new Star Trek movies.
Yeah, no, that's too hunky. For me, it's Josh Brolin, for sure. Are you kidding? He's making a face at me.
I mean, I guess. I mean, I'm not. Well, now I'm having an existential crisis. Am I thinking for me, or am I thinking as a woman?
No, I'm thinking for me.
Oh, okay.
Women or men who aren't afraid to say that a dude is good looking, let us know who your go-to good-looking guy is.
Because I mean, definitely, like, yeah, Chris Hemsworth and Chris Pine still would be, in both cases, I think every woman that looks at them would be like, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, let's go. Yeah, you're not wrong. I think the same about Josh Brolin, though. I really do.
Josh, I think Brolin. It's a combination of, see, here's what Chris Hemsworth and Chris Pine have over Josh Brolin. Number one, they've got the physique, and like Chris Hemsworth is, he plays a god and no one asks any questions.
Oh yeah. That's like, oh, well, yeah. Okay.
I mean, look at him. Look at his body.
Yeah.
That's not human.
Got those Jesus abs.
The most important part is the eyes, though.
Oh, those smolder.
They just get, you get lost in their eyes.
And that's where Josh Brolin comes in, man. Smoldering angry.
You got those, like, bright, bright blue eyes that seem unnatural. Josh Brolin doesn't have that. Josh Brolin's got those sunken, manly eyes. I don't want to be reminded that, you know, he was in Goonies.
Okay,
I want to get lost in the pools.
Calm down, Chris Pine. Your wife and kids are waiting upstairs. Finally, here's some great titles that are. Oh, good job, Bryce, on your win of the Rotten Tomatoes game. Mm-hmm. You got 3 out of 5, which ain't half bad.
What do I win?
It's a little bit more than half bad. You win respect, I guess.
All right. Okay.
So here's some great titles that are available on Shudder as we record this. The first one is, I believe it's a Shudder original. It's called Cold Skin. It was released last year, 2018. And the tag or the description for it is, in this sweeping horror adventure, a young lighthouse keeper realizes something else lurks on his island. And I've heard, I have not gotten to watch this yet, but I've heard rave reviews about it.
Yeah.
The horror subreddit, Dreadit, has been talking about Cold Skin for a couple weeks now. And so I'm told that. But I'm told by the internet that you should definitely check that out. And the only place you can get it is Shudder. Also, the 1980 film, The Changeling. Have you ever seen The Changeling?
No, I want to, though. I've heard a lot of things about it.
Me, too. It's the description for this one is, in this haunted house, essential, a composer moves to a secluded Victorian mansion inhabited by a paranormal entity, which is the total hole-in-one for me. That's like, so this is like the predecessor to The Haunting of Hill House, which, you know, I mean, it's not like there's any shortage of movies in this kind of subgenre, haunted house subgenre, but it's definitely a weak spot for me. I love it. Another one that I started to watch last night, but did not finish, is Castle Freak, the 1995 movie. An American family inherits an Italian castle, which houses a bloodthirsty monster in Stuart Gordon's 1995 creature feature, loosely based, of course, on an H.P. Lovecraft story. So this is about a freak who's locked up in a castle where, you know, it's kind of the same concept as The Changeling. He kind of haunts the castle. And finally, a bunch of Dario Argento written and directed titles, including here's a few of what's available, by Dario Argento, the, director of the original Suspiria, available on Shudder, is Demons 2, Inferno, and Deep Red. I started watching Demons last night, and it is appropriately weird and kind of off-putting and creepy, and it was a lot of fun for what I started, and then I fell asleep. So so go ahead and check those out on Shudder. Enter HMT at checkout. Get a free 30-day trial subscription of the service, and, you know, if you want to, like, actually subscribe to Shudder after that, it's only like $3 a month. So go ahead and give them a try. Try it out. And with that, that's the end of our episode. Thank you so much for listening. Remember to share this with a friend. Subscribe to us if you haven't. And, oh, Bryce has something he would like to say.
I just wanted to share this in the episode somewhere. I probably should have done it at the beginning, but just for listeners that listen to our Sleepaway Camp episode, I did a supercut of all of the mentions of a tragic boating accident throughout the episode, and I just wanted to play it for you.
We
gotta find a place.
Oh, baby, do it.
A tragic boating accident. It's a tragic boating accident.
A tragic boating accident. That's certainly not the first time I've heard tragic boating accident. A tragic boating accident.
The tragic boating accident. After her tragic boating accident.
And somebody behind the door whispers into his ear, it was a boating accident. And he goes, it was a boking accident.
After the tragic boating accident. A tragic boating accident.
Yeah. So, like, that was supposed to be eight years after the tragic boating accident.
Right.
8 years after the tragic boating accident? She was immune because of the tragic boating accident.
Because of the tragic boating accident, the survivor of the tragic boating accident.
Holy shit.
So I think it was 15 times tragic boating accident was mentioned in that episode.
If you haven't listened to our Sleepaway Camp episode, you have to. Because, in my opinion, it's our best episode.
Yeah.
Because of the tragic boating accident.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So with that, remember, if you got to do any shopping on Amazon, you can help support the show by clicking through the link on the top of our site. It's a green button. Click that and then do your shopping and you'll help to support the show. Special thanks to Bryce and myself for, you know, I think this is the 6 month mark. So thanks for sticking it out.
And, yay.
And I look forward to the year and 2 year mark and 3 year mark and onward.
Also, who knows when this is going to go out, but recently we hit 2000 downloads.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
way more people are listening to this podcast than I would have ever imagined.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's that impressive of an amount.
It's growing. No, but it's growing pretty, you know, it's got an upward trend.
Yeah.
And I'm happy with it. So thank you guys for listening. And with that, that's our review of Pieces. So have a good week.